The Courage to Lead, episode 50.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com.
Hey, Coach Harlan here. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you guys are having a great week. This is a very special occasion for me. This is the recording of my 50th podcast episode. Now, that may not seem like that big of a deal on the surface. Let me give you a few statistics. And these are statistics about podcasting. And these are as of the recording of this, which is beginning of June 2021. These statistics change because about 2,000 podcasts are added to the list every week, according to the source I went to. But as of this recording, there are 850,000 podcast titles, 850,000 titles with 30 million individual episodes. That's huge. But most podcasts fade. Okay, that's an actual word in the lexicon now, pod fade. And that happens after average about 7 episodes. I had 7 episodes a long time ago, and this is episode number 50, and I've got episodes scheduled all the way out into September, so I'm not going anywhere anytime fast, but this is a very, very special occasion for me, and I'm glad you guys are here to share it, and I am glad to share it with a good friend of mine that I get to introduce you to right now. So please welcome to the show, Natasha Ganim. Dr. Natasha Ganim, founder and director of Lion Leadership, is an agency of coaches, consultants, and seminar facilitators that serve company owners looking to build dynamic leaders, high-performing teams, and cultures that retain top talent. In addition to work with Lion Leadership, Natasha teaches seminars for Fortune 500 directors and executives at Emory University's Goizueta Business School, and recently served 7 years as an award-winning faculty member at the University of Georgia. Combining real-world experience with her academic background, Dr. Ganim spent 6 years in the Department of Institutional Effectiveness at Savannah College of Art and Design, where she gained tactical experience needed to best advise her clients on how to intentionally design the agility needed to be successful in a creative, dynamic, and fast-paced organization. Natasha holds a PhD in sociology from Emory University with a specialization in emotion management, workplace authority, and conflict. Her most important credential, however, is a credential of mom. Natasha's mother of 3 children and is known to pull out pictures whether you are interested or not. Natasha Ganim, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Harlan.
No, it's awesome. I've been looking forward to this, and I can't think of a better 50th podcast guest. I love your background. I love what you do with Lion Leadership. Yeah, and we may even have you pull out some pictures of your kids if you got them handy.
Well, never of know. Course, absolutely. They're not far. I keep them close to my desk. No, I was thrilled to know that I was the guest on the 50th show. I feel like that is just such a milestone for anyone who starts a podcast. And I'm so happy to be here to celebrate it with you.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get into all this. We're going to talk about your background, Lion Leadership, and everything else you do and the awards you've received. But before we get started, I have 10 questions. These are 10 questions the listeners know. These are the questions that I ask every one of my guests. The questions were made famous on the television show Inside the Actor's Studio, where host James Lipton asked these questions of his Hollywood elite. And I figure if they're good enough for Hollywood, they're certainly good enough for my guests. So if you're ready, I have 10 questions. First question, Natasha, what is your favorite word?
Mom.
What is your least favorite word?
Hate.
What turns you on?
Travel, just new experiences.
Amen. What turns you off?
Big egos. Yeah.
What sound or noise do you love?
I could think about this one for a minute, but I'm going to say ocean waves.
Ooh. Okay. What sound or noise do you hate?
You know that sound that kids make before they really start crying?
Oh,
like it's actually a silence. It's not a sound, yes. But you see their little tongue shaking and their mouth is open and you know it's about to come. That's the worst. It's actually the silence before the big cry.
Yes. Yes. What is your favorite curse word?
I would have to say I don't like to admit that I curse, but it would be one in which I string together many of them into one word.
Okay. All right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I have often thought what it would be like to be a ballet teacher. I grew up in a ballet studio. My mother and grandmother taught ballet their entire careers. And I never followed that journey, but I've always wondered what if.
Nice. Very cool. What profession would you not like to do?
Be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. All right. And finally, Natasha, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I would like to hear him say something that my earthly father often said to me when he was alive. And I would like him, God, to look at me and say, good job, kid.
Good job, kid. Good job. All right. Well, Natasha, we will get back, talk about your background, talk a little bit about Lion Leadership and all the other good stuff you have coming up. All right. So we'll be back right after this message. So stick with us.
Imagine having a trusted group of CEOs at your disposal. Imagine having your very own peer advisory team who could work you through the problems and questions in your business before you had to make those difficult decisions. Imagine you had a group of advisors that had your back and met for the sole purpose of making you successful in your business. What would you be able to accomplish then? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You can have that and more when you join my Business Success Mastermind Group. Join my Business Success Mastermind Group today. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com/mastermind.
And we're back with my guest, Natasha Ganim. Natasha, again, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast number one and for agreeing to be podcast guest number 50. Big number 50. Having a good time. All right. Natasha, tell me, how you got started. You got your PhD, sociology. How did you pick sociology? Is that something you knew you wanted to do? Or did you just stumble into the department? How did that
happen? That's a great question. No, I completely stumbled into it. When I was an undergraduate, I actually had two or three majors. And someone aptly pointed out to me, it sounds like you're indecisive. And I was like, yes, I am. I have no idea what I want to do. I'm going to major in everything and decide later. But I wanted to go to graduate school because there was an internship that I could get if I had a master's. And I found out that if you apply to PhD programs, you actually don't pay tuition. They pay you a teaching assistantship stipend.
There you go.
So when I figured out that I could attend Emory University for free and then get paid to go there, I figured, oh, well, then I'll just go get my PhD from Emory.
Nice.
And I wish I had a more pointed story behind how I stumbled into this PhD program, but I don't. I'm lucky I did.
No, that happens, though. I worked with a guy that he had four or five different majors and he was this close to getting each one of the degrees. And I said, why all those different ones? He goes, well, I dated this girl and that was her major. So I went with her and then I dated this girl. And I don't think he ever finished any of the degrees at all, but he was very close.
Oh, in fact, no, the reason I chose Emory over the other schools that I applied to is because my boyfriend lived in Georgia. Okay. So very, very wise. And I don't know, it's what 22-year-olds do.
Exactly. So you're not an Atlanta native?
Savannah, Georgia is my home.
Okay. Very cool. Good job. So tell me a little bit about your time there at Emory. You had some good internships. Who did you work for?
So the internship that I wanted to get once I had my master's, I did not get. So I thought, well, there's another internship I can get if I actually finish this PhD. So I'll do that. And I didn't get that internship either. But what I got was a 5-year academic degree. I did earn my PhD. It was in the sociology department with an emphasis on social psychology. Most of my research was on emotion management and conflict. And interestingly, a lot of people don't know this about my background, but what happens when you study emotion management and conflict, especially when you study it in youth, is you learn a lot about the juvenile justice system.
Okay.
Because kids in middle school who can't handle their emotions do things like pick up a chair and throw it at the teacher.
Yeah.
And that lands them right into the system. So part of my background and my study at Emory had to do with the world of criminology and juvenile justice.
Nice. Very cool.
So I thoroughly enjoyed my experience at Emory. I had really smart teachers. They trained me to be a research one university professor, which of course I never took that path, yeah, much to their chagrin. But I learned everything I know about science and the world of social psychology through them.
Nice. And then Savannah College of Art and Design.
Yeah. So another, you know, smart decision. My boyfriend had moved from Atlanta to Savannah. So I moved from Atlanta to Savannah. And I didn't want to be a tenure track university professor, even though I was trained to become one. And even though all of my professors wrote recommendations for me to apply to be one, I didn't want to do that. And I thought, okay, well, what am I going to do if I move back to Savannah? And one thing that a lot of people don't know about sociology or psychology or social psychology is that when you get a PhD in them, you actually get a PhD in statistics. All you do is manage large data sets.
Wow.
And I had taken semester after semester of statistics and taught statistics as a graduate student. And I thought, okay, well, if I go to Savannah, I wonder if anyone needs a statistician. So I had a little bit of trouble at first finding someone who needed a statistician, but it turned out that the art college was hiring in their institutional research department. And I thought, wow, what a great opportunity to work with the Savannah College of Art and Design doing anything, yeah, you know, especially something that would allow me to work with numbers and data. And so I went to work for SCAD and ultimately became, you know, part of the Institutional Effectiveness Department. And that is a department that every university across the nation has, though not many people talk about it. It is the department that handles all of the college's accreditation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So at SCAD, we had multiple accreditation bodies. We had SACS, we had CETA for interior design, we had NAB for architecture, we had GAPSI for the teaching program. And while I was there, the college opened a campus in Hong Kong. Yeah. And the Hong Kong Bureau of Education had a couple of forms they wanted us to fill out, to put it lightly. And my department was responsible for consolidating all the data that the institution had, filling out those forms and external reports, making sure everything was accurate, and making sure the college policies and procedures adhered to all of the accrediting body standards.
Interesting.
It was an amazing experience, Harlan. I had friends who had come to work at SCAD from Pixar, from Marvel, just creative geniuses. I got to work with an animator who drew Simba,
really?
Before coming to teach. Nice. I got to sit in on their classes, and this very left-brained person became a very right-brained person through that experience.
Awesome. So are you still into statistics a lot? Is that something you...
So I don't have a need for it right now in the work that I do now. When I left SCAD and went to work for the University of Georgia, I did teach some statistics courses. So it has served me well.
Yeah. And then you moved to Lion Leadership. Tell me about Lion. How did you start Lion Leadership?
Well, so that job, I have to back up and say that my experience at SCAD was the culture of the college is they hire people young, mm-hmm, and they give them responsibility that someone really 20 or 25 years their senior should have. They promote you rapidly, but they expect a lot. And so I like to say I worked there for 6 years, but I got 12 years of experience.
Nice.
And when I had my first son, I realized that working 60 hours a week was really hard. And so I loved my job, and I hated to leave, but I needed to change lifestyle to spend time with my son. And for academics, when the going gets tough, the tough goes back to the classroom. Yeah. So I went back to the classroom. I went back to, got a job working at UGA. So my family moved to Athens, mm-hmm, and I enjoyed that job. I had two more kids while working that job, but there was a point where I was teaching classes in sociology, statistics, research methods, some juvenile justice classes. And I was coming home at night, and on my bedside table, there was just organizational development, organizational behavior textbooks, management and leadership books. And I thought, wow, something might be out of whack because I should be reading about the courses I'm teaching. And it looks like I'm getting back more into the institutional effectiveness work I did at SCAD. So I started, you know, they don't pay faculty members a lot at UGA. So I thought, well, I'll just, you know, hang a shingle for myself and just say, am coach, am consultant, will coach and consult. Nice. And I just started it as a side hustle.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So my background is organizational change, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of businesses undergo changes. They could be a merger acquisition. It could be process reengineering or restructuring of the business or big software implementations, things like that. Businesses normally put a lot of money into what's happening with the change, the legal side of the change, right? The software side of the change. And they don't pay very much attention to the people. They just assume the people will always be there. Did you experience that in the work that you did? How to help companies like think more about their employees and help them through that change?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially more so in the last couple of years. You know, when you start as a coach or a consultant, you hang that shingle and you start it as a side hustle and then you slowly move into a full-time job, it takes you a minute to find your sweet spot. Yeah. You kind of do anything that anyone asks of you because you don't know exactly what you want to specialize in right away. Yeah. But what I started finding is that whether I'm meant to build this reputation for myself or not, is that when companies really got into trouble with their people, that's when my phone started ringing. Okay. I think it's because most other management consultants and organizational development professionals said, I don't want to deal with this hot mess called Natasha. And since, you know, I have so much experience in conflict and emotion management, I actually was really well suited for it. Yeah. So I started finding that company owners would call me after they had made a number of changes and their people didn't change with them. The people weren't buying into the vision that they were marching towards. And the company owners were incredibly frustrated and worried and burnt out and just didn't know what to do. Yeah. And I would come in and we would put together a plan to get the wheels back on the proverbial bus, if you will.
Good. Yeah, that same thing here, working with different companies. The senior leadership had a goal or a vision. They didn't share it that well with the middle managers who were looking in a different direction, thinking this is where we should go. And they didn't communicate that to their employees. Their employees are running around doing whatever, you know, nobody was pulling to head in the same direction, you know? So I think having that clear, compelling vision and being able to communicate that clearly is something that businesses like. What else do you find businesses are coming to you for? What are they, when they come to you, what are they struggling with?
Yeah, well, usually it's an entrepreneurial founder owner, you know, and super creative go-getter. And they have built a company from, you know, zero people to 25 people. And then that person just no longer feels comfortable running the company because they're not entrepreneuring anymore. They're managing. Yeah. That's just a completely different job. Mm-hmm. So I find they come to me seeking help there, how to find a COO, how to learn how to delegate and get out of the weeds, how to work. They don't know how exactly to work on their business and not in their business. Yes. And how to think strategically. So we do a lot of strategic planning, which pulls on my background from SCAD. Yes. Accreditation agencies, of course, require institutions to have strategic plans and for them to assess according to those plans and to be aligned and agile to those plans. Yes. And so now I'm able to apply that exact work to these founder owners who need someone to come alongside of them and show them how to do this well and to whisper in their ear, don't forget to, you know, grab so-and-so and tell them they're doing a good job. You know, don't forget to communicate what's on your mind. They don't know that yet. Yeah. You know, don't forget to repeat yourself because it takes seven times before people really understand. And so I like the coaching aspect to the founder owner. And I also like the consulting aspect of, okay, this is your org chart now. This will be your org chart in a minute. You know, this is your strategic plan now. We're going to make a new one. This is the process we're going to take to do it. This is how we're going to establish buy-in. This is how we're going to make sure your people's voices are heard. This is how, you know, your new performance appraisal process will go down. This is how your new interview process is going to happen to increase retention. Like all of those very tactical things I really enjoy talking about.
Excellent. And you brought up agility, helping companies to be agile and understand what that agility means to them and why. Talk a little bit about that. Why is agility so important?
Well, you know, I would say agility is important. Being able to change direction if and when needed is important, but you can't just change your leadership team's direction. Like it has to trickle down through the entire organization. And to me, maybe that it's agility, but it's something that drives very deep. You know, you have to be deeply agile because a CEO or a founder owner can pivot very quickly in what they want to do. And they often do, but it's, you know, you want to make sure, the entire company comes along for the ride. Sure. And in order to do that, you really have to have some strong systems and processes in place, and you have to have exceedingly aligned expectations. And that takes work. That doesn't just happen. That takes intentional work to get the systems in place and to get expectations aligned. But yeah, things are going to change. And so companies need to be agile because even if they don't change, they need to be iterating to improve. Because if they're not iterating to improve and being agile and making continuous improvement, someone else will be.
Exactly. Yeah, they're competitors.
Yeah.
Yeah, which happens. And I work with more small to mid-sized companies. And for them, a lot of the owners are technically very, very good at what they do. That's why they decided they wanted to become independent. But they have no idea how to run a business or manage a business. They don't know how to deal with the employees, you know? So they're in there trying to do everything that they know and working on the things that they know how to do. And some of the other stuff, like I said, working on the business, that's off to the side. Yeah. They're not sure exactly how to do that. This is my comfort zone. I'll continue to do this part of it. Do you see the same thing in the larger organizations?
Absolutely. People get promoted because they're great at making their widget. You know, they're great widget makers. And so we promote them because we just want to clone them. They're so good at what they do. Yeah. But the thing is, doers just really like to do, you know. Managers really have to have a penchant for teaching and for mentorship. And that is a different skill set. Now, that said, I don't know how to draw site plans. And I don't know how to build farm tables, and I don't know how to create code for software programs. I need the doer to be the manager, but no manager should have to go it alone. That's why I think coaches are so valuable, is because they sit next to the tactical wizard that they are. And they say, hey, look, this skill of managing people, just, it doesn't, it's not intuitive. It doesn't come naturally. But I can teach you how to do it and teach you how to do it well. So you can have the tactical skill and the people skills to pull it off.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That trusted advisor that Yes. They can kind of lean over and say, I'm not sure what I'm doing here. And you say, hey, here's where you need to go. I think that's important. And then, like I said, kind of helping them. But the difference to me between coaching and consulting, consultants are usually hired to come in and do something, right? Produce some product, work through, you know, some issue, but they're hands-on. Where a coach is more of the advisor level. You know, I tell my business owners, my clients, you know the business better than I do. I don't know your business, but I know how businesses should run. I know that businesses need this in place, the strategic plan. I know you need to have the goals and the, you know, templates and systems and everything in place. I can help you with those, but it's really up to you. You have to dig in and do the work. You know, I can't do the work for you. I could, but it wouldn't help your business. That would be like me taking flying lessons and then putting you in the cockpit. That's not going to work. You know, you have to actually do it yourself. Learn how to do it so that I kind of work myself out of a job. Now that you know how to do this, I'm out and your business runs.
Yeah. When I am coaching the owners of companies, I like to tell them, like, this is best practice and this is what I would recommend you do. Mm-hmm. And this is why. And once they start to understand the social psychology behind group cohesion and the why, yeah, they start to get it naturally. Some of my colleagues like to have clients for years and years and years. They're just their constant coach. And that can be good. I find that's not really my model. I like to kind of get in, add value, and get out. I think people need to have different voices in their mind's eye. And so after a while, somebody, you know, my voice will grow old for someone and it won't serve them well. So I like to come in, add a lot of value for, you know, 3, 6, 9 months, and then pass them to somebody like yourself or to another voice that I think they could learn from.
That's perfect. You probably have some horror stories too from businesses. I'll tell you one to start it off. We worked with a client up in Boston area, and he was going through a big change, a big software change, and there's some other process changes that he was doing. And coming from the organizational change background, it's like, well, we need to involve some of your senior employees. We need to get a communication plan out. He said, no, they'll do what I tell them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, hold on. In theory, that sounds great. That's not usually the way it works. You need to communicate this. He said, they will do what I tell them, or they will be on the outside looking in. And we said, okay, just, you know, here's our take on it. You're probably going to lose your top employees because they've tenured, they've been here for years and years. They know everything about the company. You haven't even acknowledged that they know more than you do. They've been here longer than you. You're probably going to lose your top people. You're probably going to lose your very bottom people who are just barely making it anyways. And you're going to keep that mediocre middle, and all your productivity is going to dip. Your sales are going to dip and everything like that. He shrugged it off. And it happened exactly like that. They lost their top employees. Sales bottomed out. He just didn't listen. And there was no way to make him listen. He had his mindset. And yeah, it was tragic. He wasn't there very long after that.
There are, of course, when you are dealing with these people who are in, you know, senior executive roles, they're in the C-suite, they own the company, you know, they've been powerful throughout their career. And a lot of times that involves, you know, getting aggressive, getting what they want, speaking directly and throwing a couple of elbows and stepping on some heads to get where they are. They're competitive people. And especially a founder owner, you know, who dreamt it, it's their baby, they dreamt it up and then they went and built it. And these, they can be bulls and like the bull in the china shop, and they have very strong personalities, and that is what has made them so successful. However, I do often tell them, this got you here. Right. This is not going to get you there. Right. And so now is the time to adopt a couple of extra mindsets to serve you better, because I don't want the company to go kaboom. I want the company to grow so you can sell it and then you can go play golf. Sure. Right. But no, there's been, you know, I haven't had too many people hyper resistant to an idea like that for change management, but I have had people who did not like what I had to say.
Sure.
So
that happens.
Mm-hmm. I have a very poignant memory because I'm a people pleaser, you know, behind the business side of me. Mm-hmm. I do want people to like me and to respect me. And there was a moment where I was sharing survey results to a group, you know, in a Atlanta high rise over lunch. And the person I was working for did not like what I was sharing at all. Mm. And it resulted in me getting cussed out and asked to leave in the middle of the presentation.
Wow.
And I was devastated at the time, but I learned a really important lesson is, you know, when you come in as a third party and you see things objectively and you share things that the business owner probably needs to know to take it to the next level of success, sometimes they just don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
And they'll get defensive.
As a coach, as a consultant, we have to have that courage to stand up and say, you know, the baby's ugly, right?
You
people say, oh, I don't want to tell them that. No, you have to. That's what we're being paid to do, is to let them know that the business is ugly. It's not functioning. And chances are you're the reason it's not doing it. You know, we have to be able to say that and get the point across. And I tell my clients, there are going to be times where you're not going to like me at all, but I'm going to tell you the way it is, and I'm going to help you work through it, you know?
That's exactly right. I mean, the job of a coach isn't just to be a cheerleader. It's to push people and to make them grow and become better at places where they have blind spots. And the thing with blind spots is they don't know they have them.
Yeah.
And when you point them out, people get very triggered. And if they haven't done the emotional intelligence work of learning how to deal with being triggered and to respond to stress in adaptive ways, then they lash out like this person did. And even for me, it took me a minute to be like, okay, this is not a me thing. This is a him thing. But then those are not great situations, but they do happen in this line of work for sure.
They do happen. Now, do you do assessments like the DISC assessment or strength finders or things like that with your teams?
I am certified in the Berkman.
Okay.
Which I think is comparable to the Hogan or the Colby. It is the personality assessment that is preferred by Goizueta, which is Emory's business school, where I do some seminars and where I serve as a coach. So it was a requirement of my employment there. And I do think it is one of the creme de la creme of personality assessments. I really like it. And so every chance I can, especially when I'm working with clients, the first thing I want to do is to do a personality assessment so that I know how to reach them better.
How to communicate with them and how they expect to receive information and stuff. That's the one thing I think is important. You know, DISC, you have your you know, backers and the people who are kind of against DISC. They don't understand it or don't like it and stuff. But I think it's important to understand some people need a lot of detail. Some people need big pictures. Some people need, you know, a gentle hand. Some people need a backhand. You know, everybody needs things a little bit differently, and to understand who it is you're talking to can help you with that communication.
Yeah, I also think it's a critical tool for team building. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a team that's made up of all the same type of person, it is not going to be a good team. No. And if you have a team that's made up of a variety of different types of people, it will be a good team, but there'll be inherent tension. Yeah. And so it is when I go in to help companies redesign their teams and to make them higher performing and more functional, assessments like that are the first thing we do.
Great. That is awesome. So tell me about your team. How many people do you have working with you or for you at Lion Leadership? Or do you have employees? Are they contractors or is it a combination?
Yeah, we don't have any W-2 employees. It's an agency. So it's everybody that you see on our team page or team members, but they are 1099s or business partners. So we have about 11 and we're growing. I would imagine we'll be at 22 before the end of the year. Some people are true business partners where they provide a service that I would never provide. So for example, an HR audit. Anybody who needs an HR audit, I can spot when they do need an HR audit and I will send them over to the HR audit person. Or if they need help with a sales strategy, I don't do sales strategy, but I do have somebody who does sales strategy and I refer them to them. Also with legal counsel and business valuation and that sort of thing. Like we have business partners for that. But when it comes to the people part of business, right, we have just an agency of great coaches, great speakers, great offsite retreat facilitators ready to go. And what I like to do is figure out what the client needs specifically and then match the their service provider to either their industry, to the personality, to the specific need.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So if I was to run into any of your team members and ask them what type of leader you are, what do you think they tell me?
Oh, gosh. I think they would say, and I'm also thinking back to the times kind of historically when I've had a more legit system of direct reports. Mm-hmm. I think they would say that I'm incredibly hardworking, like the first in, the last out kind of workaholic. I think they would say that no matter what, I have their back, that I see potential in them and I insist they go get it. Mm-hmm. But I also think they would say things like, she's a little all over the place, you know, or she talks too much, or until she truly understands a process, she's a little bit micromanaging. But then when she understands it and recognizes I can do it, we never see her again. Awesome. So I think there's probably I do some things right and I do some things not right.
Oh, that's human nature, right? That's who we are. So the podcast is about courage, right? The courage to lead. Where did you find your courage to, you could have easily, like you said, gone into the teaching track, right? Became a tenured professor at any number of universities around the area and stuff like that. Where did you find the courage to say, no, I want to go this direction?
Oh gosh, I'm still developing that courage, honestly, to figure out who I am and to define myself for myself and then to go and do it. Mm-hmm. I think that's very hard for me. Like I said, at my heart, I'm a people pleaser. Yeah. So I just kind of want to do what other people expect me to do or want me to do. And I've had to fight against that, I think, for a long while now. But there was this moment when my son was 2.5. Here we go with the kid story. Sure. My son was 2.5. And we were playing on, we're on vacation, we're on the beach. And my parents were there. So his grandparents, they were sitting on the porch. We were sitting on the porch. We were playing with Play-Doh and we were putting Play-Doh on our fingernails and we were kind of lifting up our hands and roaring at each other. And, you know, I'd roar at him and he'd run away and then he'd stop and he'd roar at me and I'd run away. And we were just playing, I don't know, we're just playing mom son games. And anyway, I roared at him and he started to run away and he stopped dead in his tracks and he turned around and he pointed his finger at me and said, "No, mommy, I'm the lion." And I kind of kept up with the game. I turned around and ran away. But a couple of weeks later, I was talking to my mother on the phone and she said, "You know, that's become a family joke in this house. Like when I don't get my way, I say, 'No, I'm the lion.'" Nice. And they just found such amusement with my son Samuel's saying that at 2.5. He knew exactly who he was. He wasn't going to let anyone boss him around. And so reflecting on that, Harlan, actually, that's how it started. I started a blog called imthelion.com.
Nice.
And it was on identity development and establishing who you are and not using other people's mind's eye to fall into, you know, labeling and expectations that other people put on you. And that became Lion Leadership.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So you work with a lot of leaders. You coach a lot of leaders and consult with them. What type of courage does it take to be a good leader?
No, it takes a lot of different types. And I was thinking about these questions actually prior to coming on this podcast and really enjoyed geeking out in my brain about the difference between courage and confidence. Because like to be courageous, you have to do something you're afraid of doing. There are a lot of leaders out there who are just confident. You know, they're confident. And so they do it, but it's not necessarily courageous. I think intellectual courage is a skill that is a must have or must developed type of courage for any aspirational leader. And that is the ability to constantly question whether what's happening in their mind is the truth or the reality of the situation, and to constantly investigate what is happening in other people's minds. And then the ability and the humbleness to admit when they're wrong and to change course when needed.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Yeah. The intellectual courage, the ability to say, you know, admit, "I don't know." You know, that's hard for some people. You know, they don't want to look vulnerable, I guess, in front of their employees, in front of their direct reports. So they won't admit that this is a little bit out of my comfort zone. I'm not sure what I'm doing here. And then ask for help. And I think the leaders that really excel are the ones that can say, "Hey, you know this better than I do. How should we proceed? You know, how do we go forward?"
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I think it's the fear of letting go. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people who get into leadership roles are very good at keeping things in control. And so when things start to go out of their control, it's scary. Yeah. And so it takes a dose of courage to delegate, to let it go, to develop ways of building trust.
Some of the other, and I've had an argument with my brother-in-law about social courage, empathetic courage, the moral courage. He goes, "That's really not courageous." It's like, "Now, hang on a minute." You know, like I said, when you talk about courage, people think of physical courage. This could hurt me, but I'm going to do it anyways, right? I'm going to protect somebody. I'm going to step in front of them, pull them out of the line of fire, away from a burning car, whatever it happens to be. They think of that type of courage. Social courage, saying what needs to be said, even if it's unpopular, but saying what needs to be said, that can be very uncomfortable for people, right? It could be harmful to some people, but I think you have to say, no, this has to be said, and I'm the only one here, so I'm going to say this. Same thing with the moral courage, doing what's right regardless, you know, even if it's put you in the most dangerous position. And I always tell people, you know, that, like you said, courage is the action. I can have courageous thoughts as I'm sitting, you know, on my sofa with my fuzzy slippers on. I can have courageous thoughts all day long, but if I don't act on them, it's really not courageous.
The social courage, the moral courage, the spiritual courage, standing up and kind of putting up boundaries for what's right and what, you know, you believe in. And especially when it comes to protecting somebody else, that's always, I don't want to say come easy for me, but it's certainly been easier because it feels like it's on behalf of someone else. But like the intellectual courage where you have to walk back your ego and your pride, you know, or you have to really get curious about what's happening in the opinion of someone else, or the emotional courage to me is the scariest. Yeah. And maybe that's what drew me to social psychology and to study emotions and emotion management in the first place, because when I was thinking about physical courage versus emotional courage, I was thinking these would be the ones that I struggle with. And I can tell you a story. A couple of years ago for my birthday, all I wanted to do was to go ziplining. I've never been ziplining. I asked my husband, please take me ziplining. It's the only thing I want to do. So we go up to someplace in North Georgia to a ziplining place. And we go, there are other people there. You know, we go through the little training class. We get harnessed up. We get up into the tree. And it's time for me to go. Yeah. And I looked down and I looked up and I looked to the side and I looked to the other side. And Harlan, you probably have never seen a person scale down a ladder more fast than I did. I mean, I was like, excuse me, bumping into people on my way down. And my husband was shouting like, are you Natasha, where are you going? And I was like, I don't know, but I'm not going here. Yeah. And I was terrified. I was sure that it was death was sure to come get me if I were to go through that zip line. And it's just so funny because it was like the only thing I wanted for my birthday. I got all the way there and I completely came right back down to the ground. And then I just followed my husband along the trees as he went ziplining and had a great time. Yeah. So to me, that was like physical courage. But then when I think of, I would rather complete that mission of ziplining through a forest than ziplining through the emotional past or the emotions of somebody else.
Yeah.
To me, that's a more dangerous place to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talking to clients about having difficult conversations about attendance, about, you know, quality, productivity, things like that. Those are uncomfortable, but they're not dangerous. Dangerous conversations start with things like, how are you? Mm-hmm. You have no idea where that conversation is going, right? The attendance conversation they've had before, you've had before, you know the script, they know the script. How are you? Just opens it up for all kinds of things, especially if you see somebody that's having some emotional episode. You know, how are you doing? Are you okay? That takes a whole different level of courage, right?
And the question I ask clients a lot, and I feel like I'm just harnessing up for the zip line, is I say, you know, they're talking about a tough conversation and their apprehension about it. And you're right. I know the script. I know what to say. It's a hard conversation, but this is what you do and how you get through it. Mm-hmm. The question is, why do you think you are the way you are?
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, somebody really has to step up to the plate and to walk through a little bit of emotional baggage and history to understand why they are the way they are. But if they can do that and come out on the other side, they'll be better for it.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife used to be afraid of heights. I was telling people we were working on a project up in the New York area, and we went into New York, went up to the top of the Empire State Building. And I got off the elevator and ran straight for the side just to look out over the city. She had her back up against the wall. She was scared to death of heights, did not want to come anywhere near it. She could say she could feel the building moving with the wind and everything like that. But about a year and a half after that, we went skydiving. And
wow.
She got up there and she strapped in with a tandem jumper and she did skydiving. She's not afraid of heights anymore. She teaches me everything every day, but one thing she taught me a long time ago was you have to face your monster. Whatever that monster is, whatever scares you, you have to be able to face it, or you will always have, you know, something over you.
Yeah. In fact, I thought my mind went in this direction when I was thinking about courage, and I was trying to think of who's the most courageous person I know. And I didn't come up with a person, but I came up with a category of people. Yeah. And I think the scariest thing that somebody can do is to conquer an addiction or an physically abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think about different families and people in them that I used to work with in the justice system, right? Who are really up against some bad odds, you know, who say, I'm going to, you know, tackle that monster anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to beat this addiction. I'm going to beat this situation. This will not define me. I'm going to conquer my greatest fear, and I'm going to make it through on the other side. And that's just a whole nother level of courage. It's very different than like courage in the business sense. Yeah. But when you think about the struggles that people face outside of the world of work, inside of the world of work looks a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if you had it to do all over again, would you do anything different? Would you pick a different course? Would you take a different course of study? Would you go independent sooner? What would you do?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I like the way I did it. I took a very circuitous route to get where I am. You know, it's not linear. I kind of wish my career story was linear because it would make sense to people. But when I say like I did a lot of work with the juvenile justice system, and then I went to work for an art design college, and then I taught statistics, and then I, you know, like it doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I think it's built me to who I am now and why I understand things the way I do. And it's also taught me how to reach people where they are and not where I might think where they should be.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, 25 years of consulting with companies from pharmaceutical, aircraft manufacturing, you know, home goods manufacturing. I've got a lot of experience that I can draw from. And yeah. I think you do too. You've got a tool belt that's unique to you, but you're able to say, hey, here's something that I saw done, or here's something we did over here. Let's try this. Or, you know, and I think that that makes for a good consultant slash coach.
Yeah, I do. I like the varied experience. I also am a like perpetual learner. I love to learn new things. And if I stop learning, then I will start doing something different to learn more. Yeah. And so I think that's probably what, how I've gotten to where I am and why I enjoy coaching and consulting so much, because, you know, every time there's a new client and a new business, there's so much more to learn.
Sure.
So I think I will be perpetually happy where I am now. We'll see.
Absolutely. So you like to learn. What are you reading, any books lately?
I just ordered a book, but it's a book about faith. Okay. In the Christian faith, and specifically because I heard about it on a podcast, and then I ordered it, and then got together a group of people to kind of go through the study together. But that is should be arriving hopefully today. I think I saw an Amazon notice come through. So
nice.
That will be my new book. And the other book I'm reading is a book called something like So Lucky, or How Did We Get So Lucky? And it's by a friend.
Really?
Cool. I know. And I was like, well, if a friend wrote it, I have to read it.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, I've got a Kindle. I'm a Kindle guy just because you can't zoom in on the words in a regular book. And if I don't have my glasses with me, I can zoom in on the Kindle and still read. And so, yeah, it's bursting with books, from management books, coaching books, murder mysteries, a little of everything.
So that's interesting. I was just thinking, you know, actually, when I read, I don't do so much to read to learn. Like I read for work, you know, I'm reading all the time during the day. But like when I go home, I read for different reasons. But one thing I am learning, which I think is surprising to a lot of people, is I'm learning to play the guitar.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I just picked it up and I got a guitar for my birthday. And so every night, that's what I'm learning to do. And I'm like, you know, Googling YouTube videos on how to play guitar and how to play that, and trying to self-teach, trying to take some lessons too.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Good job. Good job. Guitar is fun. It's a lot easier to take a guitar with you to the beach than it is to take a piano or something like that. So yeah, good job. All right. So if people want to get in touch with you, how do they get to Lion Leadership?
Well, our website is lionleadership.com.
Okay.
And our email address is info@lionleadership.com.
Okay.
It's the easiest way to find us and to reach out to us with any questions. Okay. We also have a presence on Instagram, which is lionleadership.atl, abbreviation for Atlanta. Okay. And we also have a presence on Facebook, which is just Lion Leadership Facebook page. But the content on Instagram and Facebook is the same. So if you must choose one, it's fine. You're not missing anything.
Excellent. Very cool. And I will make sure all of that information is in the show notes. So what's next? Where are you going from here? You've got all these awards. You've got all the degrees. You've got great company and the companies you work with. What's next?
Oh, so I am a learner and a dreamer. And I have learned that my mission in life truly is to help people get from point A to point B. And so whether it's meeting a mid-level manager and coaching them so they can get a promotion, or whether it's meeting a company owner and helping them build a self-sustaining company so they can get to retirement, like that really does bring me a lot of joy. Yes. But what I've recently learned is that there are all these people in the world who want to be coaches and consultants, mm-hmm. but they don't know how to do that. And so teaching at the university, I had so many students, hey, Dr. Ganim, I want to do what you want to do. And I was like, great, you need to age 25 years and you need to work all of those years. And then we can talk about it. And it's always been a problem because they're young people who are really sharp, who can contribute. So recently, Lion Leadership, we have two signature coaching packages. One is called Accelerate and one is called Renovate. Nice. And this summer, I am working on a certification program for the people out there who want to do coaching, who want to do consulting, who want to do it well, but don't have the scaffolding to get into this business, yeah. So that they might become Accelerate certified or Renovate certified. And then they can, you know, deliver those coaching packages on behalf of Lion Leadership. So I'm excited about building out those training programs and to enrolling people into those programs and having, you know, more people help me get more people from point A to point B.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So are these classes available now? Are you piloting these programs yet?
They've been piloted in one form or fashion or another, but I am going to make them more formal in terms of an online training course, you know, with assessments and a process by which shadowing occurs. And there's an application process and this sort of thing. So there's a lot of thought that needs to go into that. And that work's going to happen this summer. By August, I hope to have at least the Accelerate training program completed so that the first cohort can officially go through.
And accredited where or through whom?
To be determined.
Okay. Good deal. That sounds like fun. Well, I will definitely check that out because I would definitely be interested. I love the Accelerate Renovate. I like that progression that you've got there. There's a program after that that's more, what is it, personalized or one-to-one?
That's right. So we have Integrate.
Integrate.
So the Integrate, so the way the Lion Leadership website is set up is like, hey, do you want to do the Accelerate program, which is about self-discovery and development as a leader? Do you want to do the Renovate program, which is about, you know, building your company into a self-sustaining one? And then the Integrate option is just all the menu of service offerings we have. Do you just need an HR audit? Do you just need a personality assessment? Do you need a virtual retreat? Do you need a strategic plan? And people can kind of order off our menu, kind of they can go through it buffet style and let us know what they need, and we'll create a customized solution for them. And I'll match them with the right facilitator for the job.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. That sounds great. Well, Natasha, thank you so much. We're agreeing to be on the podcast.
Well, Harlan, this has been so much fun and I appreciate it. But I have to tell you, when I was listening to your podcast before being asked to come on and after being asked to come on, I heard you time and time again ask your guests these top 10 questions, these 10 questions from the Actor Studio. And at the end of every time you asked these 10 questions, I always wondered, what would your answers be? And I'm wondering if on your 50th episode, you would entertain me and allow me to ask these questions back at you for your audience to hear.
I think that's appropriate for the 50th. Sure. Absolutely. Okay. Hit me.
Okay. I have to throw in a little fun. If you're going to hit number 50, we're going to shake it up just for a second.
There you go.
Okay, Harlan, what is your favorite word?
Adventure.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
What's your least favorite word?
Can't. I will deal with won't. If somebody says, I won't do something, like we've had friends, female friends, I can't ride a motorcycle. It's like, no, you won't ride a motorcycle. You can, because I think people can do anything they put their mind to. So people who say can't drive me crazy.
What turns you on?
Travel. Love to travel.
What turns you off?
Whiners. I don't like people that just whine for the sake of whining. You know, it's like, oh, get over it.
Is that a whiny whine or is that a stubborn whine?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Favorite sound?
I love acoustic guitar.
Oh, well, how about that?
Yeah.
Least favorite sound?
I have a couple of them. Metal on metal squeaking can set my teeth on edge. Noise just for the sake of noise. If you've ever been in a meeting where somebody's just sitting there tapping their pencil, like don't do that. Just stop, you know, just noise for the sake of noise.
Favorite curse word?
I am not a big curser. I just never have. And if you ask any of my friends, I'll go, yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of curse. Cause I don't, if I did, it would probably be, you know, like a damn it type thing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much the extent.
Mm-hmm. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would love to be a National Geographic photographer. Yeah.
What profession would you not like to do?
Mortician.
Touche. Has anyone said that yet on the podcast?
No. There's been a lot of things in there that I kind of cringe when they say, but yeah, mortician, I don't know that I could do that. No.
What would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
We're having this discussion a couple of days ago, and COVID masks are optional, but I'd rather just, you know, welcome aboard.
Well, I love it. I have been wondering your answers to those questions for weeks now, and I'm happy I had a chance to ask them. Thank you for entertaining me on your 50th episode.
Absolutely. No, it's fun. I love these questions because, like, you know, when James Lipton would ask the Hollywood elite, he was talking to them, interviewing them, kind of their life, you know, in picture. And you could tell that they were responding to him as the character. Right. As an actor, as a character they were. These questions get down to the person. Tell me about you. And that's one thing I love about talking to people, meeting people, traveling, talking to people, you know, on the airplane or whatever. Tell me your story. I want to know about you. You know, just tell me something that maybe you don't tell just anybody, or tell me about the favorite time or something like that. That's where I think you really get to know people. So that's why I like these questions so much.
So that's also displays some of your intellectual curiosity, courageousness.
Oh, yeah. I'm like you. I'm a learner. I have books everywhere. I have books in almost every room. I've got my Kindle always with me, and I've got the Kindle even on my phone. So if I'm stuck somewhere, I'll open up a book and start reading. I love learning new stuff. The great courses. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the, we have a bunch of those out there that we'll just sit Sunday morning, you know, snuggled up on the couch, watching the great courses, you know, watching something, learning. I love it. And that's why we like to travel. Just the more I can learn, the better.
Well, that's awesome. Well, it sounds like podcasting then is actually a perfect fit for you, because you'll get to learn more and more and more from your guest. I'm looking forward to hearing more and more episodes. I'm so glad to hear that you're booked up through September. Absolutely. Keep us listening audiences entertained.
Absolutely. No, I'm enjoying it, having a great time. But again, Natasha, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I will have all of your contact information in the show notes so people can reach out to you and learn more about Lion Leadership.
Thank you, Arlen.
All right. Take care. I appreciate it. Folks, hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did, make sure you share this episode with your family, friends, colleagues. Help me get to episode 100 and beyond. I would appreciate it. All right. And that's it for me, Coach Arlen, saying so long for now.